We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You got Matt Miller on all the time.
Matt Miller.
Here I come. You ready?
Lead NFL and NFL draft analyst at Bleacher Report.
The NFL, you need guys who have upside and potential, and you have to have something that kind of makes you special.
The Stick to Football Podcast.
We ain't got to talk about too much. We just having fun and we working, baby. That's it.
Going through college and NFL film.
You need to be just an MF-er out there where you're going to put this guy on the ground every play.
Matt Miller with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Let's talk some football with Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout. He joins us on the Alpamati Ford Hotline. Over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from at Alpamati Ford. Hello, Matt Miller.
How's it going, guys?
Good. All right, you're starting a franchise, and you have to choose either Mitchell Trubisky or Baker Mayfield. Who and why?
Oh, I would take Baker. I mean, even with, like, me being a diehard Texas fan, and even with, like, having to deal with the fallout of his mouth a little bit, I would still take Baker. Here's the reason why. I've been around both of these players a good amount. I've never seen a team gravitate toward a quarterback like I've seen a team gravitate toward Baker Mayfield. I saw it at Oklahoma. I saw it at the Senior Bowl. You even saw it at the Combine. Like, people want to follow this guy. He's just a natural-born leader. I know he's struggling a little bit right now, especially with, you know, holding the ball too long or drifting in the pocket. He might be playing behind the worst offensive line in football. I feel like that's more fixable than Mitch just not being able to find open targets right now.
Separate question, but somewhat related. And granted, you've hinted at it a little bit. If you had to start a team with one offensive line, would you start it with the Bears offensive line or the Browns?
I would start with the Bears offensive line. And not to say that, like, either is fantastic, obviously, but I think the Bears offensive line, like, there's at least some dudes there that I really believed in as draft prospects. And it's like, we're just waiting to see. Like, I liked James Daniels a lot. I like Cody Whitehair a lot as well. I think with Kyle, it's like just a matter of, can he, you know, get and stay healthy? But he's obviously very talented. I think where the Bears are, at least in my opinion, where they're the weakest, you know, right tackle, you know, Bobby's done a good job, but obviously you could upgrade there. But I mean, the Browns offensive line is just absolutely terrible. I mean, they completely mismanaged the left tackle position. I mean, like, Greg Robinson is a turnstile.
Yeah.
I like Joel Bitonio, but for the rest of those guys, like, Joel Bitonio is the only one that I think for sure would start in Chicago.
So, Matt, Dan was out on holiday yesterday. Anthony Heron, former NFL defensive end, was in, and we were kind of chatting with him a little bit about this idea of the Bears trading for Trent Williams of Washington. Is an offensive line ever a left tackle away? I think that's boiling it down a little bit. You see what the Houston Texans have done. There's only been one game Deshaun Watson's probably ever played for the Texans where he was clean. It was last week. That's it. And you see how good he is. But I don't think it's just Laramie Tunsil that's gotten that line to where it's gotten.
No, that's what I was going to say. It's actually like when they traded for Tunsil, it allowed them to shift guys around. So I think if you're the Bears, like, okay, let's trade for Trent Williams. We're automatically better at left tackle, but are you going to put Charles Leno at right tackle? Are you going to try to kick him inside to replace one of those guards? Like, what are you going to do with him then? So I think, yes, you get an immediate upgrade at the most important position on the offensive line, but I think where Houston saw such a big shift, and where even when Seattle traded for Dwayne Brown, it was a lot like this. It allowed them to reshuffle their front five a little bit and get a better unit out there as opposed to five individual good players. You know, like with the Texans now, guys are finding their homes a little bit with, you know, where they are, I guess their traits are best suited. You know, I look at, like, you know, Titus Howard at right tackle. This has allowed, I think, Nick Martin to play really well with Max Sharping next to him at left guard. Like, that Tunsil Sharping Martin side of the line looks really, really strong for them, which is why we're hopefully going to finally see Deshaun stay clean.
If you're trying to fix what ails the Bears offense right now, and frankly, a lot ails it, they are down near the bottom of this league in offense. They aren't just average. They aren't just lagging behind. They're genuinely bad. What are your priorities here, and in what order are you repairing these things?
Gosh, it is tough. I'll admit it. I think about this team a lot because I know I'm going to talk to you guys on the radio every week. And it, so like there's no simple fix here. It's not a matter of, well, let's just give David Montgomery the ball more, because I even think when given the ball, he hasn't been as impressive as we all expected him to be. So I do think that the problems start up front. But on the same token, like, I want to see the playmakers getting the ball in space more. Like, I'm so disappointed that we haven't seen that become an element of this offense, because that's what I expected. Coming from Kansas City, I expected Nagy to look at guys like Allen Robinson, to look at Anthony Miller, to look at Tariq Cohen and say, oh my gosh, I have these weapons. Let me scheme up all these beautiful, creative ways to get the ball out in space for no read in the NFL is easy, but for a simple read for a young quarterback who doesn't have to be paralyzed in the backfield. And we haven't seen that. So, I mean, I would love to address the offensive line. I just don't know how you do it at this point, because of even trading for Trent Williams, the Bears don't have a lot of draft capital to just be throwing away for an offensive tackle right now. So that would be my first priority, but I think that's the hardest fix. Secondarily, like, I would get back to basics. Like, I don't know if Matt needs to spend the bye week, like, in the film room, looking at, you know, going back to his roots, looking at Kansas City, looking at Philadelphia, looking at Indianapolis, some of the guys who are running offenses very similar to what his roots are, and trying to, for lack of a better way of saying this, almost Sean McVay this thing a little bit, and just go borrow and steal a little bit your way to a more innovative playbook. And I know you don't want to throw away your playbook midseason, but they got to do something to start getting the ball out to get to those receivers and running backs that are so talented.
Before we get to the college slate, which is actually an interesting one this week, Saints are next after the bye for them. What have you, because I think a lot of Bears fans have maybe missed some of the Saints and Teddy Bridgewater getting to the point he's gotten. How do you see that offense working over the last couple with Teddy in?
I don't know that it's that different, guys. I really don't. I mean, they're still scoring at a very high rate. I think Teddy's getting more comfortable. We saw that last week. Michael Thomas has absolutely just kind of taken over since Breeze went down. So I think that's the key. Is like, you know how they're going to beat you. You know they're going to get the ball to Alvin Kamara a ton, you know, as a receiver, out of the backfield, as a runner. But then just how do you stop Michael Thomas? Because that's it. That's their offense. It's Alvin Kamara. It's Michael Thomas. They don't have a number two receiver. They don't have a tight end that you're really going to worry about that much in Jared Cook. And so even though you know that, and you know that, like, Teddy's not throwing the ball down the field, Mike is such a great route runner, and he's so physical and big that he's going to run slants all day, and then he's going to beat you because he's just so good at it that they are predictable, but they're very, very impactful, and their defense has played well. You know, they've really stepped up defensively, I think, the last couple weeks to where, you know, we're now seeing guys like Marcus Davenport start to live up a little bit to what we saw from him. And I know, like, Tampa put up, I think, 24 on them a couple weeks ago, but you went to the Dallas game, they held Dallas 10 points, and that was kind of the tipping point for that Cowboys offense that had been just red hot to start the year.
And the Cowboys defense was weird. It's very strange to see Leighton Vander Esch on his heels like that. It seemed like there was some blocking going on at the second level where the Cowboys, the middle of their defense, that level of their defense, just for lack of a better term, seemed uncharacteristically soft.
Yeah, and lost a little bit. I think that you got those guys thinking instead of reacting, which is what Vander Esch is so good at, because he's such a good athlete, and he can really beat you in three phases of the game, stopping the run, getting after the quarterback, and then dropping in coverage. It's like they just got them stepping, you know, enough. And I think we saw that, you know, we've seen that actually a lot lately. We saw it in the 49ers-Browns game, where it feels like if you can get linebackers just taking a false step, and then you come back across them, whether it's with a George Kittle or with an Alvin Kamara or Michael Thomas, like that's a really good way to beat linebackers right now.
So the Niners, the Colts in their victory over the Chiefs, and what the Raiders did to the Bears, what Dalvin Cook had been doing to everybody but the Bears, are we starting to see the beginnings of a trend, of an evolutionary trend, against some of these incredibly fast upfield defenses to get back to just pounding away at the run game a little bit? And if so, how does that affect scouting?
No, I think we've been waiting for this for a long time. I've been talking about it for like 4 years, and I know I'm not the first person, and I'm not alone to say that, okay, well, I want to see more eye formation. I want to see more motion out of the back, though, because, yeah, Dan, like, if you're going to put a 220-pound middle linebacker on the field, I'm going to put a 240-pound fullback in the backfield and a running back who can run a 4-3 behind him, and we're just going to smash the ball down your throat all day. So I think it's like, it's easy to say, like, this is how we will counter these smaller defenses, or, you know, when everyone goes nickel the majority of the time, or a big dime the majority of the time, let's just, you know, let's just overpower them a little bit. I think that's, is beautiful in theory. The problem is, you know, if you fall behind, you know, we haven't really seen the 49ers play from behind this year. We really haven't seen the 49ers play anyone this year. And I say that as someone who grew up a 49ers fan. So I don't know that we can say yet, like, okay, everyone go sign a fullback, because the Niners do it because Kittle and Juice are probably the two best blockers at their positions, but they're also versatile enough that they can catch the ball out of the backfield. You know, I think Kittle is the best tight end in the NFL right now, and it's what he does as a blocker, what he does as a route runner, as a receiver. You can put him basically anywhere, but you can't overlook, and now that he's hurt, we're going to see this show up a lot. Now that Juice is out, like, he is the cog that makes that wheel turn, because he's a great blocker. He's excellent on the move. He catches the ball really well, so they're able to do a lot of play-action stuff with those two guys because of what they set up as blockers. I don't know, and we're going to learn a lot about the Niners with all the injuries they have. McGlinchey's out, Juice is out. Like, they're banged up, and they have to go to the Rams this week. So it's like we live in this week-to-week bubble in the NFL of, oh, my God, I want to overreact to everything that just happened. You know, the Chiefs suck because the Colts beat them, and this is the NFL we live in. But we're going to live in that league for a couple of days because it's just too much parity, and there's too many injuries right now.
I'd like to find the next Quentin Nelson, too. Well, you mentioned McGlinchey, but his former
college.
I mean, when is the last time we've seen this dominant a guard? You have to game plan against a guard because of what he's doing to initiate things. He's eating people.
Yeah, I missed a lot of Steve Hutchinson's career. I mean, I watched as a fan, but, you know, he kind of got out when I got in. I would imagine that Steve Hutchinson was kind of like this, but, you know, there wasn't Twitter, and you couldn't put, like, sound bites on Instagram. Right. And
John Hanna? Do we have to go back to John Hanna? I mean,
if so, you're going to go there alone, because I don't – I think he got out before I was born. So, but yeah, I mean, I can't remember a guard. You know, there's been some good guards in the NFL, but no one like this. And I think I was at the Chiefs-Colts game. The fact that Chris Jones and Frank Clark were just completely shut down in this game. And then the linebackers, I mean, the poor Chiefs linebackers just had no answer for Marlon Mack's agility. So, you know, like, that's a good blueprint. Yeah, like, let's build a powerful offensive line and have a running back who is really good at second-level cuts. Like, that's again, it's hard to do. There's been one Quentin Nelson in the last 20 years, so good luck.
The college football slate has all sorts of pageantry with the Red River Showdown this weekend. I'm fascinated by the game. It's one of my favorite college football games of the year. What, though, is there a comp for Jalen? I mean, he may well win the Heisman, but is there a comp for an NFL prospect the way Jalen Hurts may or may not end up being an NFL prospect when we get to the draft?
I don't think so, and I'll actually be in Dallas for this one. I don't know that Jalen Hurts has a clean comp. There are times I watch him, and I'm like, God, if Dak ran, that's kind of what Dak would look like. You know, it's like the arm motion, and he doesn't have the biggest arm, but he's accurate. He sees the field well, but Jalen is a much better runner than Dak was in college. So I don't know that there's like a great comp for him. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world either. It's special what he's able to do. And like I guess the analyst in me keeps going back to this of like, okay, if with Baker, Kyler, and now Jalen Hurts, they all look absolutely flawless as quarterback prospects. But we really haven't seen Baker. Baker has regressed. Kyler Murray is just getting, you know, beat to hell behind that offensive line, which I think some of it is scheme, some of it's him, some of it's the offensive line. But I'm still a little cautious of Oklahoma quarterbacks. And I know that we just had two go first overall back-to-back, and they won Heisman trophies back-to-back. I still want to see a little more proof. And, you know, you got to wait, you know, 35 or 40 games into a guy's career to really have a lot of proof. But I'm still finding myself being hesitant to, like, jump all over Jalen Hurts, because I think especially now it's like, okay, we've kind of seen this before, and how much of this is you as a player and how much of this is this beautiful, perfect scheme that Lincoln Riley has drawn up? And maybe it is a little bit of both. Well, Jalen Hurts deserves a ton of credit.
So has Lincoln Riley, or I shouldn't just put it in one on one school and one system, has college football gotten to a point where pro scouts are more willing to look at a throwing motion, just the actual throwing motion, a guy's mechanics, and go, could work?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think right now there's such a lack of good quarterback play that we're willing to overlook a lot. You know, I mean, it used to be you had to be 6'2". Now it's like, you know, 5-10 will get it done, you know. And you had to be a 3-year starter. Now you be a 1-year starter. Mitch Trubisky, Kyler Murray, like, it really doesn't matter. Sure. And it used to be if you play in anything even close to an air raid, you just got ignored. But I would say, you know, Jared Goff was playing in a system that was at a lot of air raid elements. He went first overall. Baker went first overall. Kyler went first overall. So I think there's just such a want for quarterbacks right now. You know, look, Patrick Mahomes, who was not in kind of an air raid. He was in an air raid offense at Texas Tech. It is the same offense that Cliff Kingsbury's running in Arizona right now. And while he wasn't the first pick, and you could make a very good argument, he's the best quarterback in football right now. So I think when you see things like that, and when you realize that, you know, the guys coming out of the pro style schools just aren't producing as well, or when you see Nick Saban willing to change his offense, I think a lot of people are going to say, well, maybe this could work. I don't think any NFL team is going to go hire Mike Leach tomorrow to try to, you know, really crack this thing open. But
don't tease me.
No, I know. How awesome would that be, though?
God. We all want quarterbacks, though. So you're looking under different rocks than you used to.
Telling you, man, Colt Brennan just got born 10 years too early.
Hey,
I agree. Oh, my God, yeah.
You mentioned the Red River Showdown for Oklahoma and Texas. I don't know that I have ever seen worse tackling in my life from a single college football team than the Texas Longhorns.
Thanks, Dan.
You know what? It doesn't. I don't know. At some point, it has to matter. At some point, my football sensibilities are being messed with here because I always thought you had to tackle people.
You know, I texted my brother who works with me, and we did the podcast together. I texted him last week and was like, "Do you think Texas practices tackling?" He was like, "I don't know if they do, but I can guarantee you they don't practice tackling with their heads up, because you watch a Texas player tackle. They're staring at the ground. I don't know what this technique is, but it doesn't work. And it's like I scream and cuss at Todd Orlando every Saturday, and nothing changes, but they keep winning games. So I would take the over this weekend. I think it's 75. I would go ahead and crush that over in the Red River game.
Matt, appreciate you. Great talking with you. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you.
Matt Miller, been brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
They got to be better than that, Texas, at tackling. But we were talking about this some with the Bears secondary against the Raiders, about tackling. I think it's become so hard. The athletes, the schemes, the space that especially in the NFL game that people play in and with space and speed, it's nobody chops their feet and sets up a tackle anymore. Not in the exterior, not outside the hash marks.
You almost don't have time.
You can't.
Yeah.
It takes all of your athleticism just to turn your body and throw it at a hip and maybe you hit him.
There's some truth there.
You're moving
really
so fast, it's just so hard to do it. Nobody does the pop, rap, and
form
drive
tackling.
Thing. It doesn't.
When I was in high school, they told us that we had to square the guy
up and
finish through.
It's not power eye with Junior Seau in the middle of a form and then just shedding a fullback and taking on a running back. It doesn't happen like that.
And you know
much.
What? Truth be told, Junior Seau was sort of an unconventional tackler in his own right. He wasn't like squaring guys up and form tackling. He was chasing them down and knocking them over and doing all sorts of things too.
Well, he had that speed.
He was just better at it because he was faster and he could stop and start
fast
on a dime too.
But plus the vertical, the 35, whatever he had.
I remember.
It was insane.
Correct me if I'm wrong. If you're a longtime scorehead, don't you remember that? On the Heavy Fuel Crew show, McNeil went in one day on Junior Seau.
Really?
Called him out as like a fraud.
A fraud?
You remember?
Junior Seau?
Does anybody remember
a
this?
Fraud?
Yeah, I think I was like driving back from Bears practice.
Call
or something.
McNeil.
And Mac was going off on Junior Seau and saying if you put a blocker anywhere near him, he can't do his job. That the only time he's successful is when he's essentially playing safety and running free to a play. All you got to do is pay some attention to him.
And then the NFL drafted a whole bunch of linebackers who basically just played safeties and they went to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I don't think I'm making this up, but I've got a memory of Mac just like planting his flag on Junior Seau overrated.
I remember him saying that about Singletary, saying that Singletary is overloved and overrated.
Well, that's absolutely 100% true.
Singletary, yeah. Sure.
Well, that was true.
But his eyes, know what I mean?
But there's, I know my memory's slipping because I'm old and a lot, but that That one I remember fairly strongly of him saying that he didn't believe all the hype about Junior. So all the highlights looked great, but if you really watch him from play to play, all you got to do is get somebody in front of him and he can't be as effective.
I was a very small NFL fan at the time, just, you know, 10, 12. So I was told by NFL Films that Junior Seau was the second coming. So I believed that Junior Seau was actually the second coming.
I got a little information from one of my Cubs sources about the Joe Girardi interview and what they're saying internally about it afterward.
Okay. We'll get to that. I got a little bit on the prospective hiring of David Ross as well that I'd like to bring up. A little Cubs managerial conversation as jobs are opening today. Phillies just fired Gabe Kapler, so perhaps that puts the Spurs into the Cubs' search. It's Burns McKnight on the Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This segment's brought to you by Account Temps. Demand for top talent is at an all-time high, but you can't afford to miss important deadlines, whether you need help for a day, a week, or months. Keep your work on track with highly skilled accounting and finance professionals from Account Temps, a Robert Half company. And the bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Fan four packs are a fantastic way to enjoy Chicago Wolves hockey. Four tickets, four hot dogs, four sodas, one large popcorn, and one low price. To get yours, visit ChicagoWolves.com. They are winners. They are the Wolves. Thumbs up on the Joe Girardi Cubs interview. And it really shouldn't come as a surprise, but what I'm told...
Your thumbs?
What I'm told, no. This is from a Cubs source, is that the Girardi interview essentially went very well, and they like him. And they like that he's done it before. They like his experience. They really like that he would push players.
Theo has stated a preference to hire people that have been in that position before.
Generally, yes. Yeah. But now, this is my source saying the big question remains whether Girardi's style would fit in internally. And this is everything we sort of thought this would be. Indeed, it is. This is an experienced, respected, smart professional who has done this before with some success, but it's not without questions.
So I suppose, in a way, if you've stated the need to change, right, which is something the Cubs did over and over as that season was kind of ending and had that inevitable feeling of not making the playoffs over the last 2 weeks or so, you know, the whipping by the car, the whole thing. And then you had the press conference afterward that you need to change. On the one hand, I could see how from the inside, and especially with the players in the clubhouse, like it would be hard to move on to the next phase of whatever this is with David Ross, because he has so many ties to the past. But you would also, I imagine, you would also bank on there being a trust that whichever way Rossi is leading us is the right way. He's been here before. He understands where we've been, understands where we need to go, that whole thing.
And they aren't going to come down to a war of wills in a playoff series that they want to schedule the bullpen this way. They want to schedule the pitching staff this way. It goes, nope, my locker room, my lineups, I'm the manager, and I'm going to manage by my gut.
Yeah, I mean, you just go back to that playoff, the postseason exit interview, essentially, that Joe Girardi did after his playoff loss with the Yankees, right? I mean, you just go back and play that, and that's the reason he had to leave.
A texter says, well, the bigger question is going to be the money. And actually, again, from just the people I talk to, they don't think that's going to be a problem.
Theo said it.
That they would be able to have that with Girardi, and even with whatever we expected his demands would be, I think his desire to come back and manage would probably mean that the Cubs would get a relatively friendly number on that.
Well, Theo said in the 81-minute presser to end things that financial remunerations would not be an issue when it comes to the managerial spot. That's not on the salary cap.
Right, nor do I think they would have to overpay for Girardi. I don't think there's going to be some ridiculous premium, though I can't speak to that with this number of openings and the Mets' interest in Girardi. This could get real weird real fast.
It could. Well, the speed at which it could operate is interesting. Yeah, plus you've got this Joe Espada with the Astros, who is apparently a very interesting candidate. I find his credentials very fascinating. I wouldn't be upset at all.
No.
If that's the guy that you had in for a second interview and really sat down. But if they're still playing baseball, which we'll see, but if they're still playing baseball, it makes it more difficult to hire that guy, have your interviews, and get yourself set. Correct me if I'm wrong. The only other managerial opening that Girardi has been attached to so far.
Mets.
It's just the Mets. Mm-hmm. Nobody's attached him to the Pods or the Angels. The Phillies just came open today, but people have been speculating for a while that Gabe Kapler was going to be out. Indeed, he was, in case you missed it. Gabe Kapler has been fired as the Phillies manager. But it's just the Mets, right?
Why would you want to work for the Wilpons?
If I was being held hostage and I had to, if they were actually giving me a big bag of money, I suppose, I'd have to see it though.
Literally,
I'd have to actually see it. Or if I was Bobby Bonilla, I guess those are the three ways I'd want to work for the Wilpons.
The 319 wants to have his cake and eat it too. What about David Ross as bench coach and Joe Girardi as he phrases head coach? Now it's called manager.
Mr. Manager.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody else is interviewing Ross. That's one thing that remains unknown to me. If as much as we are taking it as an absolute certainty that he is a valuable managerial candidate, why aren't other teams interviewing him then?
Wasn't his name... I'm trying to think. Remember, he turned down the potential of being a bench coach last season.
Bench coach.
Citing... I'm just going through the... But I don't think the Phillies were involved when they were talking. I haven't heard his name anywhere.
Right? What does that tell you? Anything?
Well, if you believe Jed and Theo, and I think you should in this instance, they think that David Ross has a future as a manager anywhere and that any team would be lucky to have them. In fact, we were having a conversation not recently, just this summer, about how, boy, if David Ross leaves... While for a moment there, you'd forget it because of the way the Cubs ended the season. For a moment there, we were actually speculating about whether or not Joe Maddon just come back for a year, maybe a 2-year deal, something like that. Maybe just do this one more time. It seemed misguided then, but it's especially misguided now. But what were you going to do if you lose out on David Ross, if somebody else hires him?
Oh, no.
Because that's your guy.
Yeah, well, doesn't seem to be a whole ton of interest.
I find Ross really interesting because of something he wrote for the Players Tribune, just like I think it was two off seasons ago.
Okay.
He, in the, it's the Players Tribune thing. So I assume David's writing it with somebody else or whatever, but it's his story. And he talks about how after a season ended with the Red Sox, he and Theo had a chat. And Theo came down and told him, you got a reputation in this league. And it's not great. You don't understand that you're a backup catcher. And you're acting like you ought to be a starter. That has to change. Your role in this organization, your role in baseball has to change. Ross said he took that to heart, really went through, worked on his stuff from the inside out, and altered his approach. Then became the Grandpa Rossi
figure.
What
did he mean by that? What did he mean by you're a backup, but you're acting like a starter?
I think he was just maybe just looking out for himself too much. From my standpoint, there's two kinds of red-assery in baseball. There's the one that's, you guys are screwing this up for me. Kind of like the Todd Hundley approach, right? You guys are screwing this up for me. It's all your fault that we suck. I can't believe we're all doing it. And you could see that from the outside and go, oh, look at that. He's really getting on those plays. He's getting on his teammates.
He's holding them accountable.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Yep. Holding them accountable. And then there's the other kind, which is it's more like a we approach, I guess. You know, this idea that the team has to pull together, that it's about the 25 and you're affecting everyone else as opposed to you're affecting my dollar, my ability to that kind of thing. That's my perception of it.
We versus me.
That's my perception of it. I could be wrong. I'm sure there are nuances in a lot of 25-man clubhouses, when you go from city to city. But in reading the piece that Ross wrote for the Players Tribune, that's kind of how it seemed to me. That it needed to shift from a... here's how I go about my business. Why don't you do this too? To a here's how we go about our business. Now let's go win championships.
Okay.
And I think there's a value there in that if you are the Cubs front office and you're looking to change, you are looking to hold on to some of the things that have made you successful. Theo said it a number of times. Players that are on the next Cubs World Series team are on this roster now. But we're also looking for change. A guy that fits that bill is a guy who's been there, been the wrong kind, got told he's the wrong kind, changed, and succeeded afterward. That's a blueprint.
They also don't want to be resting on the laurels of their brilliant unicorn season of 2016 when absolutely everything went right, and then he is the absolute symbol of that season.
It's absolutely true.
And there he is.
That's absolutely true.
The face of your voice of your team is that symbol.
If something went wrong You know, if he had a David Roberts or if it, something just blows up on him, that would evaporate real fast, I think. Whereas Joe Girardi, as practiced manager, as World Series champion, kind of has a backstop, I think, to something going wrong. I don't know which one they're more apt to jump on here, though.
We have the Midday Midway coming up next. I've got some inside information on the filming of the next Star Wars movie.
Ooh.
And a certain scene that's being filmed. And it looks like C-3PO may be speaking out of school.
Okay.
Somebody found Anthony Daniels. Maybe he had a couple of glasses of sherry.
Oh.
And I don't know. Maybe
goodness gracious me.
Maybe Anthony was saying things he wasn't supposed to say. I don't know if he's going to void his NDA. But if C-3PO sounds like this in the next movie, we're going to know there was a problem. I also, I'm going to ask you about a pair of, you don't want holes in your shoes, but would you want holy shoes?
Ah, I see. Okay, the Midday Midway is on the way. Before the Midday Midway, when we come back, we've also got a small programming announcement about tomorrow's show.
We do?
We do.
And we've got $1,000 cash. Oh my God, the next segment is All Things to All People.
Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
So far today, we have talked a lot of baseball with what's going on in the managerial hiring and firing realm with the Cubs right smack dab in the middle of it, and Joe Maddon as well. Joe Girardi interviews, an interview that was said to have gone quite well, whatever that may mean. Matt Miller talked football, and we also teased that we're going to get into a little something-something regarding what's going on with the flight of the current baseball. We
yes.
will definitely be on that a little bit
something
later.
Could be afoot. Here's a small programming announcement before we get to the Midday Midway. You want to tell the people what we're up to tomorrow?
We're going a little long tomorrow because, again, we're in for Lawrence Holmes until 2 o'clock. So we figured Bears bye week, extra time. How about a little Friday Fung?
I'm in. Let's do a little Friday Fung.
So we are going to do this at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Do you remember the story that Jay Zawoski told about his weird neighbor?
Yeah, it was just apparently some dude just walking around the neighborhood, a guy who knows who Jay is, walking around in a Cubs lose L jersey, but it's a Brewers jersey.
Wearing an L flag as a cape, and there's like walking back and forth in front of Jay's house and talking to Jay's wife.
Not good.
So, and we said we should hear people's stories about the odd behavior of their neighbors. So it's going to be Please Don't Be My Neighbor. And that's going to be tomorrow.
We want all of your worst neighbor stories.
Oh, it's not called Fung is winning. Winning is Fung. Or Please Get Hit by a Bus. It'll probably transform into that, as some of these do. But we're doing that 1 o'clock tomorrow. And really looking forward to having some fun to hear your stories about creepy, bizarre, uncomfortable neighbors.
So this is one of the most predictable stories. Two players on the Texas high school team, now coached by Art Briles, were ruled ineligible at a district executive committee meeting Tuesday, though the state's governing body for high school sports told the Dallas Morning News on Wednesday that the undefeated team will not be forced to forfeit games as a result. The district committee ruled unanimously that two Mount Vernon High School players moved into the district for athletic purposes.
No, you don't say.
You're not supposed to do that. In case you've forgotten who Art Briles is, he's the guy who was fired by Baylor in 2016 in the wake of a sexual assault scandal at the school. You and I both remarked at the time how absolutely inexcusable it was for anybody to hire Art Briles as a football coach.
Yes, and it wasn't because of illegal recruiting.
No.
It was because of not caring about rampant sexual assaults.
That's also bad. But just how stunned are you that perhaps Art Briles sees something more important, nothing more important than winning football games? Shocking, isn't it?
Amazing.
Shocking.
What would you pay for these? This is from a Brooklyn-based brand, MSCHF. And this is a pair of Nike Air Max 97s.
Ooh.
They are decked out with 60 cc's of holy water sourced from the River Jordan, injected into the soles of the shoes.
Oh, wow.
So you can literally walk on water. A crucifix, red insoles that recall Vatican traditions, an inscription of Matthew 14:25. They are scented with frankincense.
Matthew 14:25 is thou shalt not travel, right? That's that 11th
thou shalt
commandment.
Not take contested twos.
Isn't that where they put the Jordan rules?
Right. Send another defender at the perimeter. Do not shoot contested
twos. It's not a Euro
twos.
Step. It's a Jesus
but,
step
but,
through
but
the lane.
These are being called the Jesus shoe. And they are selling for $3,000.
I'm good.
You're
on
sure?
That. Yeah. I mean, does this have Vatican approval? I don't think they need any more of my family's money.
Originally $1,425. They've sold out. They're now going for up to eight times the price.
I'm sure Jesus is fine with this pricing, by the way.
Well, I mean, you gotta consult him. And apparently
Jesus walked everywhere. He needed good ankle support.
That,
you know?
Part of this is a bit of a troll job, where what this brand does is tries to point out some of the ridiculousness of collaborative corporate culture, and is taking this. So this, if you're wearing them in sincerity, it's a problem. But your money is your money. The idea is to, in some ways, poke fun, to undermine the very concept of commercialism.
I thought Jesus would have been a Birkenstock guy.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay, so you know how we joke about all the flora and fauna in Australia being able to kill you?
It's not a joke.
Yeah, it's not a joke.
We just point it out. We're not joking
well,
about
it. Well, you can add something to flora and fauna. Fungi, too, now. Fungi. It's all in there. However you like to pronounce it. Some across the pond like to do
fungi?
It. Fungi. Fungi. Fungus. Check it out.
Okay. Yeah, I will.
One of the world's deadliest has been discovered in Australia, far north for the first time, thousands of miles from its native habitat in the mountains of Japan and Korea. The poison fire coral fungus was discovered in a suburb.
As soon as I hear poison fire coral,
probably don't touch it.
Yep.
Several people have died after mistaking the bright red fungus for edible mushrooms that are used in traditional medicine.
Okay.
James Cook University mycologist Matthew Barrett, who confirmed the identity, said it is incredibly toxic. It's the only mushroom with toxins can be absorbed through the skin and causes a horrifying array of symptoms if eaten, including vomiting, diarrhea, fever, and numbness. If left untreated, multiple organ failure, or causes a person's brain to shrink, leading to death.
Leading to, to calling the score.
Yes, but prior to death, you call the score.
You call Les's overnight show.
Jeez.
Everything's you to vote for Tyler Bray time.
71,000 people say it's time for Tyler Bray.
These mushrooms are fantastic. Saute them in butter. It's time for Tyler, but I'm dead.
This is from ScreenRant.com. The climactic battle of Kylo Ren and Rey in Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker took 6 days to film.
Of course it did.
In a few months, the third film from the sequel trilogy will hit the theaters, directed by J.J. Abrams. It's the final chapter in the 9-movie Skywalker saga. And Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi left the characters in similar places, both needing to regroup with their respective allies in preparation for their inevitable clash in the future. With his true identity unknown to the stormtroopers, coupled with the secret of his betrayal involving the killing of Supreme Leader Snoke, Kylo is oddly at a very vulnerable position, despite having an army at his disposal. Meanwhile, Rey is tasked to lead the remaining resistance fighters while continuing her journey as supposedly the only remaining Jedi alive. Well, interestingly, Anthony Daniels, C-3PO, recalled his experience. He was in France, and this was reported by Star Wars News Net. So Daniels was there during the filming of the official poster scene, says it took them 6 days. Says it was brutal. It was in November, nonstop heat wave after heat. Was it wave? It was nonstop wave after wave, whatever that means.
Filming, I guess.
Probably. Gave huge props to Daisy and Adam for going through that. Called Daisy a true character hero in the trilogy.
Actually, on one of the posters, they're fighting like amongst an ocean or something. Maybe he did literally mean waves and waves and waves.
It might be. And I don't know if he's allowed to talk about these things, but if you're Anthony Daniels, do you care at this point?
Like they're going to recast C-3PO?
Yeah, what are they get another C-3PO?
Yeah, sorry. Anthony Daniels. No, we're in. Danny DeVito is now C-3PO. We're going with Danny DeVito.
I think he's probably in good stead. But a 6 day shoot. We also don't know because of the trailer video of her using the red cross guard lightsaber.
Well, the double bladed lightsaber.
Double bladed lightsaber, like a Darth Maul kind of thing.
Maulish.
For whom is she fighting? We don't know.
Still think it's a Force dream. I really do. I don't think they're turning Rey to the dark side. They didn't bring J.J. Abrams back to bring her to the dark side. I'll tell you that much.
Guess what time it is?
About time for Mark Chenowski.
And time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is chalk. Text chalk. Chalk playing little bitch to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is chalk to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Bulls talk. We haven't done it in a while. I got to watch them play a couple of preseason games, and I, for one, am encouraged.
I liked what I saw last night. I had some fun watching Bulls basketball. I always have fun talking about the Bulls in the NBA with Mark Chenowski. He's on the other side of a quick break. Princeton McKnight, 6-7 to score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.